Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen, and on today's show, we have an interview with Anabel Lopez. And Anabel Lopez was one of the best amateur bodybuilders in the 1970s. I believe he also started in the 1960s. Anabel was good friends with Chris Dickerson and Boyer Coe and Sergio Oliva. And he competed in the AAU and NABBA and also the WBBG. So he has a lot of experience. And one of the things about Anabel that's really unique is he spent his career competing as a natural bodybuilder. He never used steroids. And he was sort of a smaller guy, probably 5'6", maybe 160 pounds. And he did really, really well for his size and the fact that he was natural. It was really amazing. In fact, a couple of years ago, I used to promote a show out here in Tampa, Florida. It was called the NPC Natural Suncoast. And every year I gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to a natural bodybuilder. And the first year we did it, I gave it to Bob Gallucci, who was a top AAU competitor and who never used steroids. And the second year, I gave it to Anabel Lopez. So I just wanted to recognize his career and being natural and competing in all those contests. You may not realize this, but back then, they didn't have natural bodybuilding shows. So if you decided to compete without using steroids, you just had to compete in an open show against guys who obviously were using them. So Anabel did a really amazing job. So we have an interview with Anabel Lopez coming up soon. All right, I want to mention off the bat that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with, and it's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe contest in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12, and you will get 12% off your order at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, and speaking of Samir Banute, I just heard from him today. He finally got his Skype together. So Samir is ready to do our second part of our interview. I think we did our first interview in 2015. So 4 years later, we're ready for part two. But Samir is a great guy. He just called me from California, and his Skype is working. So we will hopefully get that interview going pretty soon, and I'm still working on my season of talking to the women bodybuilders. We're going to talk to Ruth Silverman, who used to work for Ironman magazine, and Tanya Knight got back to me, and she said she wants to do an interview, so hopefully we'll get that going pretty soon. At the end of our interview with Anabel Lopez, I'm going to read an article from another magazine. This one's from Muscle and Fitness magazine. It's from the March 1980 issue. And it's about Frank Zane. It's written by Frank Zane, and it was right after Frank won his third Mr. Olympia in 1979. And if you know anything about Frank Zane, what's pretty unique about him, he was very into the mental aspects of training. He read a lot of philosophy. He's a very smart guy. And he was into this one philosopher named Carl Jung, J-U-N-G. And Carl Jung was really into dreams. So Frank used to record his dreams all the time, like every night, every day when he woke up, he would immediately go and record his dreams, and then he would try to interpret what they meant. So when Frank was competing in the Mr. Olympia in the years that he won it from 1977 through 1979, he had a dream each year that foretold his victory. So I thought it was really, really interesting. And in this issue of the March 1980 issue of Muscle and Fitness magazine, Frank has an article called Three Dreams in a Row, and he talks about that. So I want to read that, and I will read that at the end of our interview with Annabelle Lopez. So stick around for that. Frank was really a unique individual, and I thought this was a really interesting article. He was really insightful, and he was really, like I said, into the mental aspect of training, which is really what made him unique. And he really developed his physique the way he wanted to develop it, with the symmetry and the shape and the definition. So what a great bodybuilder. Speaking of great bodybuilders, Arnold Schwarzenegger had a scare today. He was out in South Africa for the Arnold Classic out there. And he was at an event where kids were jumping rope. And he was recording it for his Instagram or Snapchat or whatever he records it on. And some idiot comes along and runs right past security and does a drop kick into Arnold's back. And he knocked him into the crowd, and it was all on video because Arnold was recording it on his phone. So security finally grabbed this guy. I can't believe he got past security. His security team really dropped the ball. I mean, this guy, if he would have had a weapon, it would have really been a problem. But I saw it from another angle on Twitter, I think, and it looked like Arnold hardly got hit, so it looks like he's doing okay. But, I mean, come on, Arnold's 71 years old now, and he just had heart surgery last year. So we don't need Arnold getting hurt just from some idiot trying to show off. Whatever this guy's problem was, he looked like he had some mental issues or whatever. So, but thank God Arnold is okay. And like I said, I saw from that other angle, and he didn't even get knocked to the ground, so it looked like he was all right. And what really impressed me about Arnold was after it happened, he didn't get mad. He wasn't making a big scene. He just sat back at the table, and a couple minutes later, they left, and he was laughing and smiling like he always does. So what a great guy. So it's such a shame that this happened. But hopefully when Arnold appears at other events, he'll have a better security team. There's so many crazy, crazy people in the world today. All right. In other news, the New York Pro is going on today, so I don't know who's winning. I know my friend Jessica Reyes Padilla took first place in the figure division. So she is having a hell of a year. She got third place at the Arnold in Columbus, and then she won the Arnold in Australia, and now she won again. So she's really at the top of her game. So congratulations to her. I met Jessica, I think, in 2015 when she was still an amateur. She was just doing her first contest. No, I'm sorry. That was 2014. And then in 2015, 1 year later, she got her pro card by winning her class at the Junior Nationals in Chicago. And now she is at the top of the pro division in the figure department. So congratulations to her. She's doing awesome. Breon Ansley, who used to work for Old School Labs, is going to be out in Tampa, Florida in a couple of weeks, June 1st. He's guest posing. So I hope to meet up with Breon and maybe get a workout with him. He is also sponsored by Florida Alternative Medicine, the same company that I work with and that sponsors this podcast. So that should be fun. Breon is looking good. Going by his Instagram pictures, he's big, and but still real lean, so he looks great. And he's going to be much improved, I'm sure, for this year's Classic Physique Olympia. So he'll be going for three in a row, so that should be pretty exciting. I also want to mention we have a new Patreon supporter. So in addition to Scott Barron, who has been with us now for many, many months, 10 months, we also have Mark Johnson, James Kerr, and a new guy, Robert Brown. So thank you guys so much for helping to support the Bodybuilding Legends podcast with your monthly donations. If anybody out there wants to help support the site, if you enjoy listening to the site every week, just go to our bodybuildinglegendsshow.com website, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the Patreon link, and we have different divisions, and you can choose to donate whatever you want to donate. And I would appreciate anybody who does that. So thank you very much to our new guy, Robert Brown, for supporting the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I did get one email from last week. It wasn't about last week's show with Jerry Branham. I didn't get any emails about that. So I hope you guys enjoyed that interview I did with Jerry. I always love talking to Jerry. We talked about the year 1977. We did that for the last 2 weeks, but I didn't get any emails on that. But I did get an email from Martin Doherty from Louisville, Kentucky, and he said, I just listened to your interview with Leon Brown. Nice individual. Frank Zane got me tickets back in 2011 to the Arnold Sports Festival. I attended the prejudging and took some photos and video. I had long since quit lifting, and I think the last bodybuilding show I saw was back in the 1980s, probably the Mr. Kentucky. Anyhow, when I left the prejudging, I got in my car and I looked over and I saw Leon Brown about to get into the bus that takes everyone back and forth. I shouted over and asked him, "Are you Leon Brown?" He said yes, and he was surprised that I knew who he was. Nice individual. I offered him and his wife a ride over in my car. I didn't realize how many friends he had, but we were all jammed into my Buick LeSabre. I think it was me, Leon's wife, and Leon in the front seat, and I can't remember how many individuals were in the back seat. I think Leon's wife was a little angry with Leon. We were jammed into the car pretty good, but Leon told a few good old stories. I told him that I sent a link to that Sports Illustrated archive to Mario Strong, who I believe handles his website. I don't think Leon understood what I meant when I said the article in Sports Illustrated was online in the Sports Illustrated archive. One of the individuals in the back knew what I was talking about. He may have explained it to Leon later on. Anyhow, if you couldn't find the link in the Sports Illustrated archive, here it is. And Martin included it with the email. He said, "I've enjoyed your podcast. I'll have to check out a few more. Have a good one. Martin Doherty, Louisville, Kentucky." All right. Thank you, Martin. Thanks for that email. And I think the link that you sent about that Sports Illustrated article to Mario Strong was the one that Mario sent me. So thanks for doing that. So if you guys have any comments or questions or suggestions about the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, you can just send them to me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. I always appreciate your input. And before we get to our interview with Annabelle Lopez, I also want to mention that we're brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com, and they will work with anybody in the continental United States. You don't have to be in Florida. Again, their number is 813-922-8939. And they also have a new product called the Magic Pill. It's developed and backed by science. It's a formula that was made by chemists and expert formulators who are working with Florida Alternative Medicine. It's a revolutionary fat-burning product that's getting rave reviews from athletes all over the country. A month's supply of this amazing fat loss pill and thermogenic is only $39.99. So call Florida Alternative Medicine at 813-922-8939, and you can order yours and then mention that you heard it on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast and tell them to give you a discount and tell them I said so. But if you call them about their other services, they will give you a free consultation and they will give you 20% off your order. All right. So here is our interview with Annabelle Lopez, where he's going to talk about his very impressive career competing in the top national level contest in the 1960s and the 1970s. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have a very special guest with us this week. His name is Annabelle Lopez, and Annabelle has been around the bodybuilding scene many, many years. He competed in several organizations, including the AAU and the WBBG, and he also competed in the NABBA universe and also the IFBB. So, Annabelle, pleasure to have you on the show, finally.
Well, I'm honored. It's an honor to be here, and thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah, I haven't seen you since I gave you a Lifetime Achievement Award at one of my bodybuilding shows in 2015. So that was 4 years ago already.
Yep, I have that plaque right in my wall gym. I always talk to people about it.
I know you've got a long history in the sport, and you met a lot of great bodybuilders along the way, as well as creating one of the sport's most symmetrical and great physiques yourself. Why don't we start at the very beginning, as we always do, and if you could just tell us how you got into lifting weights and how you got into bodybuilding in the beginning?
Well, it's a long story, my friend. So I began, to be interested in bodybuilding, or actually weight training, when I was 12 years old.
Wow. Okay.
So I was telling, I'm always telling the people that I train, when they get a little bit like, Aki says, "Listen, I've been doing this for almost 100 years." So.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, I began my bodybuilding. I for some reason, you I had that in me, that interest in strength, you know, and especially because I was never a big guy. So mm-hmm. I figured that if I was to exercise, you know, as I used to see the other guys do, that I will be strong.
Right.
But what really got me interested in the bodybuilding, I had a cousin that at that time when I was a young kid, he was a well-known bodybuilder. His name was Raul Pacheco.
Okay.
And if somebody was to Google that name, they would see pictures of him. That's how I began, you know, because I used to see him, and I was very impressed with him. Mm-hmm. And when I really got the bug about training, and I thought that, oh man, I really want to do this, was one time that I went to the movies to see a picture of Steve Reeves, you know,
Hercules.
And when I saw that movie, that's it. The bug hit me really hard.
Right. That movie has inspired so many bodybuilders. It's unbelievable.
Absolutely. And I think it's still doing it too.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, it's life is if we were to predict how life functions and what's ahead in your life, I would have never dreamed that one day I would meet him in person. You know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and even more, him saying that I was one of his favorite bodybuilders. You know, that
really. Oh, really? Wow.
And you know, so we met one time and we took pictures together, and wow, that was exciting. But anyway, go ahead with your questions.
So you were born in 1942, so you got involved in bodybuilding around the mid 1950s, then, huh?
Somewhere around there. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So you said you're trying to get bigger. Were you small when you started, Annabelle, when you were like 12 years old?
I was, you know, especially, you know, being raised in a very poor environment, you know, we really have the nutrition to keep our bodies, you know, healthy and strong, you know. So, yeah, that's about the time that I began. Yeah.
Where did you grow up, Annabelle?
I was born in Puerto Rico.
Okay, but, that's what I thought.
My parents, you know, move over here when I was, I believe, about 11.
Okay.
Somewhere. Yeah. And then I grew up in the South Bronx.
Oh, in the South Bronx. Okay. All right. So when you started training, did you go to a gym or did you start training at home?
I started training at home. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I used to buy the magazines, and I used to, you know, at that time it was mainly like the Weider magazines.
Right.
And I purchased he used to advertise a set of dumbbells, and somehow I put a little money together by working part time in a grocery store after school.
Mm-hmm.
So I purchased a set of dumbbells, and then I had a friend of mine make me a bench out of wood.
Okay. Wow.
So he was a good carpenter. You know, he was a good friend of mine, and he made me that bench, and I had it in my room in my home. I used to live in the city projects, and in my room I had that bench and I had the dumbbells, and that's where I really started exercising, just by looking at the pictures in the magazines.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what got you the idea to start competing? When did you start competing?
I believe that I entered my first contest in, I think it was 1969.
Oh, okay. Wow. When you're in your 20s.
Yeah. I was, you know, the people started telling me, man, why don't you compete? You know, you have a good body. You know, I never thought, you know, that I would do something like that or enter a contest. But they had a beginner's contest, and I entered the contest, and I happened to win the title.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really exciting. And after that, everybody started encouraging me, you know, the other people that were, you know, ahead of me, encouraged me to continue training, and that's what I did. You know, I got that bug about competition, and I wanted to get stronger and the big muscles. And then after that, I just continued to improve, it became part of my life, actually.
Yeah. So in the beginning, it wasn't you weren't really wanted to become a competitive bodybuilder. You just wanted to get bigger and stronger, and you were inspired by Steve Reeves. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I used to see the comic books about Tarzan and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, when you're that age, you know, your mind is running all over the place. You know, things like that.
Right.
Yeah.
And then in 1969, you did the Junior Mr. America, the Boyer Co one, right?
Probably. I don't remember. It could be. You know, you guys know better than me about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking it up on the internet. It says you got seventh place, and Boyer was first, and Chris Dickerson was second.
Probably something like that. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
And I just continue to work out. You know, I really enjoy the part about, you know, competing and things like that. And I enjoy doing it. And at that time, you know, we used to enter contests every month.
Oh, really? Every month? Wow. Yeah.
Whatever was around, we went in it.
Yeah. So what were the national level shows like back then, Annabelle, those AAU shows? Because I remember I've interviewed Boyer and I interviewed Chris Dickerson before, and they said that back then the Mr. America contest or all the national shows, you had to do like lifting, and the lifting points would go towards the total score. And that was like a lot of what they judged on also, as well as your personality and your poise and how you conducted yourself.
Yeah, it was really very interesting. I guess the AAU was trying to kind of balance out and give this title of the Mr. America a lot of, you know, integrity. You
yeah.
know? And one of the things that you had to do, you had to have what they call athletic points.
Mm-hmm.
What they meant by that was that you had to be able to compete in some other sport that it was not just bodybuilding.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the whole idea. That so depending what you did as a professional, like for instance, if you was a school teacher, I mean, even if you didn't have the best body there, a lot of guys won.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So they had all this, you know, points and this interview. They ask you a lot of personal questions, and in a way, as I got older and I looked at this, I said, this in a way it doesn't make sense to me, you know, mm-hmm. at that time, because although it was a bodybuilding contest and it had to be with your body, but a lot of guys that didn't have, a lot of guys got beaten that didn't have the physique.
I mean, that's what I heard.
Guys that had the physique, but they didn't have the intellect.
Right, right. Yeah, like I remember reading about Harold Poole. They said he had the best physique, but I guess he had a stuttering problem. So when he did the interviews, he ended up taking second in the contest because of that, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That was one of the big examples then, you know, and it was rough. It was rough.
So when they did that, like when they did that lifting, because I know that they would hold the Mr. America a lot of times with the weightlifting championships, the American weightlifting championships. So did you have to lift on that day while you were getting ready to compete in the contest?
Okay. I got my points by practicing the three Olympic lifts.
Yeah.
So the way that you got your point was that you had to compete. You had to enter a contest. In other words, Olympic lifting contest where they had the clean and jerk, they had the overhead press, mm-hmm. and snatch. So it all depends how you score in those contests, and then they keep record of that, and then they give you the points when you enter the bodybuilding contest as being not just a bodybuilder, but you are able to use your body in other ways, not just having big muscles, you know?
Right. So you didn't have to do it on that day, though. You just had to do the lift sometime during that year, and then you would – okay, okay.
Right, you had to be competitive, you know, competing in that country, in that other sport.
Right, okay. All right, I was always confused about that. I didn't know if, like, because I always thought if a bodybuilder's dieting and he's getting ready for a contest, he's not going to be the strongest. And then if he's forced to do Olympic lifts, that's crazy, you know?
No, because what they were looking for was for you to be able to use your muscles for other things besides just exercising with the weight.
Yeah, yeah. So what was it like competing in those national level shows the first year you did it in 1969? Because I'm looking at your record here. It says you did the Mr. USA and the Junior Mr. America. and the Junior USA. So you competed in some big shows then, huh?
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, to me, just being in that show, you know, was a big deal for me. But I always had the problem of, you know, that my size, when I was compared, you know, next to the bigger guys, mm-hmm. I had a disadvantage, you know. As you know, the bigger guys, I always tell people, you know, sometimes people tell me, well, you know, that's not fair. I said, well, this is the way it is. It's very difficult for a little good guy to beat a good big guy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very difficult, and I accept that. I accept that, you know. So, you know, that's the way it was. And the other thing was that in those days, it was done by height classes, not weight class.
Yeah, right. So you'd be up against maybe a guy who was your height but much bigger than you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, one of the names I noticed here on this list was Bob Gallucci. And Bob was a drug-free bodybuilder, and you were also a drug-free bodybuilder, right?
Yeah. When I began, you know, and I always like to explain this part, when I began to get, you know, involved, you know, in more advanced competitions, you know, I always say that you have to be careful, you know, with the young people, because sometimes, you know, you're young and stupid.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And sometimes you begin to, you know, be around people that do things that, because they're known names or because they're advancing in whatever it is they're doing, you think that you have to do that too. I just want to, I always like to clarify this part when I'm interviewing. In those days, everybody used to take this little blue pill, Dianabol, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they say, no, you know, that's nothing, you know? And, so, you know, eventually, I kind of, in the beginning, I said, no, you could try that, you know, and you're going to see it's going to make a big difference. So I began to kind of experiment with that, and I noticed two things immediately, you know, that it had a better effect in my body, you know? And I began to notice that while I was sleeping, I would wake up with nosebleed.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea the side effects of these drugs.
Yeah.
And the other part that I noticed was that it really didn't do anything for me.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't get any bigger or stronger, I think?
Listen, if that was the case, I would have gained a lot of weight. I have never, ever in my life weighed more than 155 pounds.
Really? 155? Wow, that's amazing.
That was my highest weight, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It really didn't make me go anywhere, you know? And then I was advised by the other guys, no, you have to take this, you have to take that. Then I started kind of looking into it and reading about all these drugs. And that's when everybody started coming out, you know, or what these things could do to your body, you know. So then I said, no, this is not for me, you know. So I always tell people that drugs don't make champions. You see, all these drugs, all these steroids, if you have the right body type, you have the good genes, then the drugs will help you build up more. But if you have a guy like me, for instance, that is small, you know, medium bone, don't carry a lot of weight, it's not gonna make me beat guys bigger than me.
Yeah.
See, it's not gonna make me look like you, as big as you, or as big as Chris Dickerson, or as big as Boyako. You know, it was not gonna make any difference to me, because I could have taken all the drugs in the world and I was still done what I was gonna do.
Yeah, I read Bob Gallucci's book, and it was interesting because I guess his dad influenced him, and he told him, you know, you should never take drugs and stuff. But it was interesting reading his book, because every year he said when he was competing, he saw more and more guys taking them. So that was right around the time when it was really catching on, and a lot of people were taking them. And like you said, people didn't know anything about them. You know, they didn't even know they were any side effects or dangerous or any health effects or anything. So probably people were just taking whatever everybody else was taking, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's about the size of it. You know, that there was no research done. Nobody knew really what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything started coming out. And that's, you know, everybody has to make their own decisions, you know, but we have to be very careful with those things. I don't like to comment too much about that, because I don't want to hurt other people. So everybody has their own interest in what they do in life, you know, and you have to make your own decisions. But in comparison to what we tried then at that time and what guys do now,
Yeah, that was 50 years ago. That's a big difference.
This guy's just like committing suicide, man.
yeah, for sure.
My saying is that our sport has gotten really, really bad because something that is supposed to be so good for you has become your worst enemy for bodybuilders and even other sports too.
I know when you look at bodybuilding when it started in the 1800s, it was all supposed to be about health. You know, and then you look at someone like maybe Jack LaLanne, he always preached about the health benefits of it, and now it seems like that's secondary and nobody even thinks about that now, you know?
Yeah. You know, like right now, at my age, you know, I'm 77.
Yeah.
I'm only like a little less than 10 pounds under my best weight.
Really? Wow.
I'm going to tell you, I tried to gain those 10 pounds and it's very difficult for me to gain weight.
Yeah.
I could eat whatever I want. Recently, I went on a 3,500 calories daily. And if I put on a couple of pounds, it was a lot. It's been a couple of months.
Wow, really? At 77, you're eating 3,300 calories and you couldn't put on any weight. That's crazy.
yeah. And I maintain, you know, I was blessed. The other day, somebody wrote me a letter and a text or something. And I was asking him, he said, man, I just want to know how a guy your size was able to put on so much muscle.
Yeah.
But I did, you know, it just, you know, it's just like everybody else. Listen, John, everybody could exercise, but not everybody's going to bring, you know, you could have a guy do your routine forever and they're never going to look like you.
Yeah.
You know, because you have the right genes, you have the right bone size, you have the right height. And with me, it's the same thing. You know, I get guys in the gym that says, man, I do the personal training. I want you to train me. I like to look like that, like you. I said, well, you know what? In order for you to look like that, you're going to have to be born from my father and my mother.
Right. Exactly.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about 1970. You competed in the Junior Mr. America, and then you did the AU Mr. America. And the guy who won both of those shows was Chris Dickerson. And you became good friends with Chris, right?
Oh, yeah. We would, you know, Chris helped me a lot. You know, we still remain good friends. We trained together for a long time. Yeah, we were training partners for quite a while.
Wow, what was that like, training with Chris? What kind of workouts did you guys do?
I got to tell you, Chris has always been a very nice person. I have no complaints about him. He really took interest in helping me. And you know that he was also helped by Bill Pearl. And we kind of implement a lot of the stuff that Bill will show him, you know, teach him. But we trained together for quite a while. Yes,
yeah. Yeah, he had a great physique, especially back then when he won the Mr. America.
Yep. I think that year that he won, I think I was third in the overall, which for me was a big deal, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm both AAU Mr. America and the AAU Junior Mr. America, I placed third.
Okay.
To me, that was, you know, that was a pretty big, you know, it's a big deal because there was a lot of good guys there at that time.
A lot of big guys, yeah.
Yeah, so I did good. You know, I believe that I always did good because of my symmetry. I learned how to pose really good, which Chris helped me with. And I enjoy posing. And I believe that that's being able to display your physique at your, you know, and show your strong points. It's a little, you know, it's something that is very important when you compete to do that.
Yeah. How did you guys learn how to pose back then? Obviously Bill Pearl probably helped Chris with the posing. Like when you were training with Chris and if you guys were getting ready for a show, did you work with each other in the posing? Because I would see pictures of the old school's gym and you'd see Arnold and Zane and Draper. They'd all be standing watching each other pose. And it seemed like everybody's kind of helping each other with their poses, right?
Yeah. I don't know if you ever saw Chris do a posing exhibition, but he was great. You know?
Oh, yeah. One of the best,
It was a work of art, you know. And what we used to do, you know, Chris influenced that in me. And we used to spend every week at least an hour in posing. So what I learned was that he will tell me which poses were the best ones for me when I come to compete that will show my physique the best. So from there, we develop a routine just by the routines, you know, doing poses that display my body to my advantage.
Yeah.
You know, which is something that the guys nowadays, they make a big mistake of trying to imitate other guys' routines, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I try to tell people that all the time too. It's just because a pose looks good with somebody else, that doesn't mean it's going to look good with you.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is why you need to have somebody look at you when you're getting ready for a show.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then back then you guys didn't pose to music either, right? You just came out and they just would play background music.
Yep. In the beginning, there was no music. That came later on.
And I noticed you also went into that AAU Mr. World contest that was in Columbus, Ohio, and they had an amateur and a professional. And that was the one in the professional event where Arnold Schwarzenegger beat up Sergio Oliva for the first time.
Yep, that's right. Yeah.
What was that contest like?
That was a while ago to me. you know, John, to me, being around all these guys and being the person that the guy that I was, you know, where I come from, and to me, this was all big stuff, you know. Just being in those shows for me was wow, you know, a big thing, you know. And if I placed, if I did, I didn't, you know, because I kind of felt when I got to that level, I felt that I was biting a little more than I could chew, you know.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. I never saw myself, you know, as being really that great, you know, to be among you guys, because you're included in that. You know, you have a great physique yourself, you know.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and it's very, very difficult to compete, you know, against guys that are bigger than you. I mean, I remember I have seen magazines that some of the shows that we were together, like with Danny Padilla or a lot of these other guys that became very big in the IFBB, that Mike Mentzer and a few other guys. And I used to beat those guys in the AAU a few times.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So, yeah, we used to kid about all that. You know, sorry, I don't have a problem with that.
So when you took third at the America, were you thinking, you know, maybe I'll win this contest one day? Was that one of your goals?
Yes, it was. Because at that time, there had never been a Hispanic, you know, a Puerto Rican guy to win that title.
Right.
I honestly believe that the AAU was very prejudiced.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. I heard back then it really was.
You know, and they couldn't deny Chris the title because Chris was a very articulate guy, very smart guy, very well spoken. You know, he did it. You know, and he opened the door for the other guys and from the black race. And when I placed third, my goal was to do that. I said, wow, I would love to be the first Puerto Rican to win the AAU Mr. America, you know? There were others that competed, but they, you know, that were good bodies, but never made it, you know?
Right.
And I'll tell you a little story about that quickly. And that interview, when they interviewed me at that time at that contest, AAU Mr. America, there was a judge there that asked me, the question was, so why would you like to be the win the AAU Mr. America? So, you know, I said to him, well, you know, I would like to be the first Puerto Rican to win this title. And the guy said to me, well, there's no such thing as a Puerto Rican Mr. America. I said, but that's not what I'm saying. You know, I'm not saying that I want to be a Puerto Rican Mr. America. I said, I'm saying that I want to be the first
Puerto Rican
guy from Puerto Rico that won the AAU Mr. America.
Yeah.
Right? You understand my point, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So that didn't go over very well. I noticed that it didn't go very well. And actually, that was the last time that I competed in the AAU.
Oh, really? Wow.
Because then I realized and I said, no, these people are not going to let me win this title, you know?
Yeah.
That was the last time that I competed in the AAU Mr. America.
Wow. And you did it many years, right? You did it all the way up until 1975.
From the beginning of my bodybuilding career, all the way through, I won all the regional titles, you know, local titles.
Yeah.
Titles I won, yep.
71, you had a good year. You won the Mr. East Coast overall. And then you went to the Mr. World and you took first place in the short class.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, for a little guy with a that come from a very poor environment with a limited academic education haven't done too bad.
No. Yeah, that Mr. World was interesting because they would have guys from all over the world. Like Albert Beckles won it that year, so he came from the United Kingdom, of course. And Paul Grant was in it, and you know, other guys.
I beat out Paul Grant in that contest.
Did you? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I got to tell you a little story about that. You're gonna get a kick out of this.
Okay.
Paul came. He came over to me. You know, we were hanging around. And he looked at me. We had never met in person. And he looked at me and he says, you know, I don't know how you beat these big guys. You know, I have to see how you beat this guy's bigger than you. Bigger than you. I says, well, you're going to see tonight. And I beat him.
You beat him.
So, you know, those are little stories that I get a kick out of, you know.
Yeah.
I was underestimated in clothes.
Yeah. Did you get to know Boyer Cole pretty good? Because he was a top contender AAU back then.
Boyer Cole was always a really nice guy. You know, we had a good friendly relationship, yeah.
Yeah. So which were of the Mr. Americas was your most favorite, you think? Which year? You did it for many years.
I don't know. Be a little more specific with the question.
You got third place in 73, right, behind Jim Morris and Pete Gronkowski. So you beat, there was 32 guys in that show. So you beat a lot of guys in that contest. So you must look great in that show.
Yep. I just happened to, you know, that happened to be in really good shape. I always train very hard. I never trained more than 4 days a week.
Oh, really? Okay. No, that's interesting. Because everybody's training 6 days back then, right?
Oh, my God, no. I have never trained 5-6 days a week.
Yeah.
I always trained, and I did a split routine. So, in reality, I was doing my whole body 2 times a week.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I figured out, you know, later on I figured out, you know, that I could not train and do the things that the bigger guys did, you know, did.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would not work with me, you know. I work out Chris and everything, but, you know, Chris was a hard trainer, you know, and he's a very strong guy. And later on, I just, you know, went on my own. I trained with Steve Mihalik for a few years.
Oh, you did? Wow.
And we did a lot of hard training. Steve, you know, was a really nice guy and everything. And at times, I used to think that he was not training, trying to help me. I thought he was trying to kill me.
Yeah, I heard about how he trained. He was crazy.
Yeah. But I was always as well, you do what you have to do. I'll do what I can do, you know. So,
yeah.
But it was good. We had a good friend. You know, we were very good friends, and we stayed in touch. And then we lost contact for a while. And I was very hurt to find, you know, when I learned how he ended his life, you know. And it's rough, you know, rough things that happen to some guys, you know, because I believe that it comes a time in life when you have to learn how to let go.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. You're going to wind up hurting yourself, you know. So,
did he commit suicide because he was sick, or was it just like you said? He didn't learn how to let go. You know, he didn't learn how to. He couldn't deal with getting older and you know, not being obviously the bodybuilder he was earlier.
He became very sick. He was very sick.
And, oh, was he?
Yeah, he had heart problems. He was in the hospital for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I had lost touch from him, you know, for a while. And one time he sent me a letter, an email, to make contact with me again. And it was very strange, you know, what he said in the letter.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, he was going through very hard times, you know. And he said, I just want to tell you one thing. And for Steve Mahal to say what I'm going to tell you what he said, it wasn't easy, you know. Mm-hmm. He said to me, he says, you know, you have always been such a great guy. You have always had such a great physique. You always had a better physique than I.
Wow.
And
that's a great compliment.
I said, when I read that, I said, something is wrong with Steve.
It doesn't sound like him, huh?
Yeah. He says, you were always so much better than me.
Huh.
2 weeks later, John DeFendi sent me a letter that he had committed suicide.
Wow. Hmm.
Now, when he said that, I wrote back to him, and I said, Steve, are you okay? You didn't sound too good in what you wrote to me. And tell me where you're at. Are you in the hospital? Because if you are, let me know, and I'd like to come and see you. And I would like to speak with you.
Mm-hmm.
But he never answered me. And 2 weeks later, I was notified that he had committed suicide.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah. And I spoke to John, and he told me he took it very hard. Everything was, he lost, you know, he lost all desires to live because he could not be the person that he used to be, you know?
Yeah. Have you seen that happen with other bodybuilders too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. It's a horrible thing, first of all, to end your life like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to learn that we all have our time in life.
Yeah.
Our days. Our young days are very important to, you know, to us, to the human race, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we lose track of that because we become so self-involved, you know. And I think committing suicide is a horrible thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to learn to adjust. I tell people, you have to learn to adjust, you know. You have to know when to step away.
Yeah.
See, our young years are the most productive for anything that we want to do. Then mm-hmm. it comes a time in life that, okay, that's enough.
Yeah.
You know, you can't play around with, you know, with time. You know, it's going to take you down one way or the other, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
With Steve, it was a very sad, you know, what he did, you know. The same thing with Joe Miko was the same thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mr. America in 1984,
Yeah, it's crazy. I have a picture with both of those guys. One time that they did, I don't know if you remember that at the Arnold show, they had Legends of Bodybuilding. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, yeah, I was there. I was there at that show. I saw you guys, yeah.
So, you know, I was there, and that was the last time that I saw both of those guys, and we took a picture together.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's sad, you know, that you cannot live to enjoy your old years and enjoy the fruits of what you have done in your young years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. Not looking the same way you used to look, you know?
Right, right. Well, in your case, you were you got married and you had kids, and, you know, so you had probably grandkids later on, right?
Yeah, I got 7 grandchildren.
Wow, yeah, yeah. So I think that puts a different perspective on it when you have that, you know, right? When you have that in your life. Mm-hmm.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. I have enjoyed my life. I feel that I have lived my life to the fullest, you know. I am very glad that I became a bodybuilder, because bodybuilder, you know, has been good to me. It also has been bad to me, you know, in some senses, you know. But as far as, you know, being able to sit, you know, right here on the phone with you and speak with you, you know, it's a big deal to me still. And it's all because of bodybuilding. And I'm mm-hmm. glad that I did it. I'm glad that I did it the way I was supposed to do it, you know?
Yeah. What did you do for a living back then, Annabelle?
Most of my years, I drove a bus for the New York City's Transit Authority.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even when I was competing and all that, and they used to allow me the time to go away, you know, and they knew what I did, and they wrote articles about me, about the contest that I had won.
Mm-hmm.
I set up a gym in one of the bus depots for the guys to work out.
Oh, really? Okay, cool.
And they wrote an article about it in their news paper that they have, and things like that. I enjoy doing things like that, and I still do.
Yeah, yeah. And you're obviously in very good health now. You said 77, right? You're 77 years old now.
77. I'm not dependent of any medication. I don't take any kind of medication. I still work out. I had a couple of, you know, the last couple of years, you know, a little bit of problems. I had 2 years ago now, I had my right shoulder, total shoulder replacement.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, it's been 2 years now. And I'm back training good. I saw the doctor that did the operation, and I encountered a couple of situations during that time, but it was not the fault of the doctor, you know, things that happened. And I just saw him two months ago. I went back to, you know, for him to check me out. And he says, you know, you're doing great. I don't have to. I want to see you once a year just to check you out. But he says, he said to me, I want to tell you something. He says, "You are the most amazing person I have ever operated on."
Oh, really?
Yeah. And this guy, you know, he operates on professional, you know, football players, baseball players, you know, he has mm-hmm. his specialty, you know.
Yeah.
And so to hear things like that, I look back on my life. I said, wow, I'm glad that I tried to do the right things for my body, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Not only training and eating good, also not taking the drugs, also competing all those years. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm big on what I eat. Yeah. I'm mm-hmm. big on what I eat.
Hey, tell me about Sergio Oliva, because I know you were good friends with Sergio too, right?
Yes, I was.
So talk about that friendship. How did you get to meet him?
We met Sergio. I can't remember exactly the first day we met, but we knew each other from the pictures. And then when we met, he was like really nice to me, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was a great guy. He was a very funny guy. And he had a name for me. He didn't call me by my name. He used to call me Pancho Villa because of my mustache.
So, oh, okay.
We became really, you know, very good friends. And whenever we met, we had a good time together and all that. Uh-huh. Again, the last time that I saw him, I was very saddened by the way he looked.
He was
very sick. He was mm-hmm. very sick. It was tragic, you know, to see a person go through those changes, you know, so fast.
What did you think of his physique when you saw him?
He was amazing.
Yeah.
He was amazing. He was, you know, the night that I won the WBBG Pro Mr. America, he was in the contest. They used to hold also a contest that it was called Mr. Olympia. Dan Lurie was trying to capitalize on that too.
Yeah.
So he ran that title, and Sergio was there. And since I won the Pro Mr. America, I qualified to go for the Mr. Olympus. And I said, wow, you know, I have to go and spend
this. Yeah, go up against Sergio, yeah.
So it was funny. I told Dad, I'm not going to go compete against Sergio. He's a joker. I'm going to bring it to him.
Right.
But it was funny because when I woke up and this guy saw me woke up on stage, this guy embraced me. And John, I felt like I disappeared into his body.
Right. I remember seeing a picture of you. It must have been at that contest where you were handing him the trophy or something. And,
yeah, that was it.
Yeah. I think you were kneeling down, or he was kneeling down, and he was laughing. I remember seeing him laughing.
It was very funny. So, but that's it. Yeah, that was my experience with him.
Yeah, he was a great guy.
You know, he was a police officer in Chicago.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And I found out later that one of my cousins was a school teacher in Chicago, and she was his English teacher.
Oh, really? Wow. Hmm.
Yeah. So my cousin said, you know, she was telling me one day, I was telling him about you, and he said, oh yeah, Arnival, I know him. He's got a nice little body.
Who did he say this about?
Yeah, he said this to her. Oh yeah, he's got a nice little body.
Oh, that's funny.
So that was, you know, that's my story with him, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I have nothing bad to say about anybody. I get along with everybody, so.
Yeah, and then in 78, you went over to London. You did the NABBA Universe, which was, you know, one of the most famous contests ever.
Yeah, that was really the top of my, you know, I was really at my best shape there.
Yeah, I remember seeing the pictures of you.
Dan Lurie sponsored me to go over there and compete, and I could not believe that I was so well known over there, you know. So.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. I was received very well. I had that opportunity to be there. And to me, you know, it was fine. You know, I was happy with whatever the results were. You know, just standing on that stage with this guy was really great.
And you got third place, too.
Yeah. I also had the opportunity to be a guest poster in Spain.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When I went over there, wow. I always tell everybody, now I know how it feels to live the life of a superstar for 3 days. That was really amazing. I was able to do all those things, and I was, you know, I'm very grateful, and I thank God for all these things that have happened in my life, you know.
Yeah, you had to be very proud, Annabelle, to be a smaller guy and totally naturally, you didn't take drugs, and you're competing in shows like, you know, pro Mr. America and the Mr. America. Yeah. And then you went over to the NAVA Universe and you take third place. You know, you're beating out guys from all over the world. You know, it's an international field.
Yeah. You know, the only thing that I regret from that time, that I don't have any videos from my posing.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah. They probably weren't available back then, right?
Everybody asked me about, you know, if I have any videos from my posing routine. And the only one that I did actually was Wayne Gaelish did a video of me when I was at the NAVA Mr. Universe.
Okay.
I contacted him and he said that he doesn't have any copies of it. And he paid me for it, you know, to post. And if anybody that's listening to this interview and you have videos of me posting, make them available to me.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe they can contact me and I'll get them to you. Yeah.
Sure, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
The last few years of your competition career, Annabelle, you went over to the IFBB, right? You did the Night of the Champions a couple times and a lot of the Grand Prix shows. How was that experience? Yeah.
Well, again, you know, I'm very fortunate to have been able to do that and stand against all these guys so much bigger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I still refused, you know, to do drugs. And a lot of them, I don't want to name names, you know, but they suggested to me. They told me, you know, Andrew, if you take this, and this, you're going to see how you're going to do in the IFBB.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to badmouth the IFBB, you know.
No, I'm
telling you my story. So I said, really? I said, how in the hell do you take all this stuff? I said, I would say, aren't you concerned about your health?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's going to happen to you later on? And I'm going to tell you this because at this time and age, I'm open to tell you because you're interviewing me, you know, and you want to know. The last time that I competed, you know, and I did travel, you know, with them for quite a few shows, I was in the first night of the champions in New York, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
We were in Louisiana, I believe, doing a big show over there that was called the Grand Prix of Bodybuilding. Remember that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Louisiana so Grand Prix.
I was there, and that was the last time that I ever competed. And I want to tell you a little story that I haven't really told anybody.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you anyway. One of the judges there was, Bill Pearl was there. And Bill Pearl and I, we became pretty good friends. You know, whenever I went to California, I used to go visit him, like train a couple of times in his gym.
Right.
And him and I became very good friends. And we met each other always, you know, in those shows. And Bill, after that show, Bill came over to me and he met me in the, as we were walking back to the hotel room. And he says, Hannibal, I need to speak with you. And Bill was a very straightforward guy, a wonderful person. I mean, he was a real gentleman, Bill. I have a lot of respect for him. And he says, I want you to come to my room because I need to speak with you. And these are the words that Bill told me. He says, you know, you have come a long way in bodybuilding. These are Bill's words, words of wisdom. And he says, you have done very well. You have won a lot of titles. You have beat a lot of guys bigger than you. He says, you know, you have made a mark in bodybuilding. He says, but I'm going to give you an advice tonight. If you want to compete, and he says, and you will, by your accomplishments, you will never have to take a back seat on anybody in bodybuilding. He says, okay. He says, but listen to what I'm going to tell you, and you make your decision. He says, I hate to see you go up on stage. When you're by yourself, you're a winner.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but when you stand in between all these guys who are so much bigger than you, I don't think it's fair that they judge you against these guys. The only way that you're going to do good in this kind of show is if you do what these guys are doing.
Mm.
He says, and I don't advise you to do that.
Right.
And my advice to you is to walk away from this now and don't keep entering this contest against these guys that I know you don't use drugs. I know you don't do this, that, you know. I hate to see that happen to you. You don't need that anymore. You have done the best you can with what you have.
Yeah.
And that was, I believe that was in 1983.
Okay.
And that was the last time I competed in bodybuilding.
Wow.
He says, either you begin to do the same thing or you walk away.
Right. Play the game the way everyone else is playing or just don't do it at all, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I understood that very well. I understood that very well. And I said, no, because I always been, you know, concerned about my health, even right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just think,
mm-hmm.
I make sure I'm healthy. I make sure I do this, I do that, you know. That's another experience in my life, you know, that I came up. And again, whoever's listening to this, please, there's a time in your life for everything. Don't go back and be humiliated.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've seen a lot of guys, and this happened not only in bodybuilding, but also in other sports. You become a great person. You become a champion.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot compete against youth.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do that, you know.
Right.
You already had your time. Let these other guys do what they want, what you already did.
Yeah, exactly.
I have people in the gym, sometimes they tell me, man, but you still look so great. Why don't you go into this one over, I don't know, 100 countries? For what?
Right.
What am I going to prove?
You know
what I'm going to prove? Some young guy that doesn't have the experience that I have is going to beat me and make me look better.
Right, right. Yeah, you had your time, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of, I have met a lot of great people, you know, a guy like Richard Baldwin, you know, really nice guy, you know, and we stay in touch, you know, and he, you know, the same thing, you know, he has his time, he has his physique, he continued to train, you know, and mm-hmm. we all have, you know, issues in life and we deal with them and go on. And it for me, it is great that I can still be part of a sport that I love and has been so good to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. What do you think were some of the highlights of your competitive career, Annabelle, if you look back over all those years you competed, all those shows you did?
Wow. We just mentioned them. We, you know, like, for instance, to me, going to the NABBA Universe was, like, the top mm-hmm. for me.
You know,
after winning the Pro Mr. America and all that and being able to go over there, I said, wow, that to me, that was the tops, you know.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is being able to be of service to others and people that write to me, being a role model and people looking up to me, that has become very, very big. And I says, wow, you know, I would have never thought in my life, you know, that this, just because I work out with weights, I will be able to be of blessings to other people, help mm-hmm. people just because I want a bodybuilding title, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very important, you know. It's just like you, you know, if you have never competed, you have never won the titles and be known the person that you are, we won't be speaking right now, right?
Yeah, exactly, right. Are you still training people and still helping them with their workouts and stuff?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, I thought I saw pictures of you on Facebook doing that. Yeah, that's what I was asking.
Yeah, and the other part was recently was the, you know, being inducted into the National Fitness, you know, Hall of Fame in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
That was in 2013.
Okay, yeah. 13. Oh, that's great. Yeah.
And the other one, when you invited me to give me the Life Achievement Award, man, that was, I said, wow, that was, to me, was another great night.
So yeah. I was proud to do that.
A lot of good memories, you know. And I think that was a good thing that you were doing. I don't know if you're still doing it, but, you know, I think that is something that guys like me look up to, you know, when mm-hmm. you are called and you give that award, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I you know, a lot of people still know who you are, Annabelle, because I know when some of these Facebook pages where they celebrate the old days of bodybuilding, they put your name up or they put your picture up, and people still obviously still remember you and they remember how great your physique was and stuff when you were competing.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And that is wonderful, you know, and only because I wanted to get strong and have a nice body, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look where it led you.
Yeah. 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 But, you know, I have no complaints, you know, I'm really grateful. I've been able to, I'm a Christian. I'm able to use my bodybuilding background to help other people spiritually. That means a lot to me, you know.
Right.
I look back at my life and I say, wow. I really think that guy was involved in my life, that he allowed me to win all these things so I could be a witness for him nowadays, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And people come to me for advice only because I was a bodybuilder, and they know that I'm a Christian guy, you know, and that's very important to me too, you know, to be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Annabelle, and I'm glad we got a finally chance to talk to you. I've been meaning to get you on the show because I know you definitely are a legendary bodybuilder, and we need to get you on here to hear your story from you. So congratulations on everything, and I'm glad you're feeling so good and in such great health, and your family's doing good and everything. Thanks for joining us again on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast.
Well, it's been a pleasure. It's been an honor for me, and thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely.
All these things are big deals for me, you know? And thank you so much. I hope we could meet soon.
All right. Yeah, me too. All right, Annabelle. Take care.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. God bless you.
You too. Bye. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Annabelle Lopez for joining us this week. And I want to thank our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. If you guys enjoy this podcast, please go to iTunes if you're listening to it on iTunes and give us a rating and leave a message. Also, if you want to support the podcast through our Patreon link, just go to bodybuildinglegendsshow.com and in the upper right-hand corner. I appreciate you guys thinking about that. And now I want to read this article from the March 1980 issue of Muscle and Fitness magazine. By this time, it had changed from Muscle Builder magazine to Muscle and Fitness. And it is an article written by Frank Zane, and it was right after his 1979 Mr. Olympia win, which was his third Olympia win in a row, and it's called Three Dreams in a Row. It says, symbolic and meaningful dreams preceded each of my first two Olympia victories. The year 1979 was no different, except that I had my dream earlier than ever before. My logbook says January. The first of the year is the time when I sit down and I make all my resolutions for the things I want to accomplish during that year. One of the resolutions I made for 79 was to win the Olympia for the third time. I didn't say anything about it publicly until June, 5 months later. I wasn't sure how much the tour for our book, The Zane Way to a Beautiful Body, would cut into my training. Luckily, the tour was stretched out over several months, so I was able to train with little interruption. By summer, I had made the firm decision to go for it. My 1977 pre-Olympia dream involved Robbie Robinson, who loomed big with a great deal of publicity. I had this dream where I was at the beach, and I threw a long, long pass with a football. Robbie had thrown about 70 yards, but mine went hundreds of yards, and it hit a small hangar that had Robbie's model airplane in it, and I blew it to pieces. In my pre-Olympia 1978 dream, I stood on stage in front of the audience, and I was the only competitor there. In this year's dream, I am in a large building, probably the one in which we have our condominium. It's not so much that the building was distinct in my dream. Symbolically, the building represented something else, as everything in this dream did. I call these breakthrough dreams. They are different from ordinary dreams. I don't have them all the time. Mostly they occur before some big event. The information in the dream helps me maintain the proper attitude before the event. It tells me something about the outcome. In my 79 dream, the building I am in begins to shake as though there were a large earthquake. I run out of the building and into a wide field, and I see several lights lined up in a row in the sky. I watch these glowing balls flash across the sky. Briefly, they light up the heavens, and then they disappear. As I'm standing there thinking about it, three of those lights suddenly dart down at me out of the sky, and I have to duck and lie flat on the ground to avoid being hit. The lights have a luminous, mysteriously divine quality about them. You can attach any meaning you want to that. What is happening in such a dream is also happening on a synchronistic level. Synchronicity, which I have talked about in a previous article, means meaningful coincidences that have occurred in your life. One category of that is having a dream that occurs in a symbolic way. You make the connection between the symbols. In this dream, I made the connection immediately. At the time of the dream, the Pope was visiting Mexico, and just before he arrived, three big earthquakes hit the country. They happened at the same time I had the dream. When a person has a dream about something that will happen in the future, and it does happen, it's an example of synchronicity. Another kind of synchronistic event is a dream or a vision which coincides with an event that is taking place at a distance and is later verified. The earthquake and the three lights happened in my dream at the same time as the earthquakes in Mexico. But my dream meant more than that. The connection is the Pope. The Pope is Polish. I am of Polish descent. The connection with the Pope is very symbolic to me. That was the dream. I immediately knew what it meant. It foretold my third victory in the Olympia. I wrote it down immediately in my log. I will win the Olympia for the third time, but I must have faith. This is symbolized by the Pope's connection with the dream. I also wrote, I can win it even more if I choose. There are lights in the sky, but I don't discern how many. Those three lights had come down out of the sky and they almost hit me in the head, making it very evident that I was going to win for the third time. They are in a row, I wrote. I can make it earth-shaking. There is always the connection between language, metaphor, and the way things come up in your dream, like the earthquake. My dream began preparing me a good 8 months in advance. I had established my attitude. But I must come out of any rigid structures that are confining, I wrote. These structures are symbolized by the building in my dream. I knew I couldn't go to any type of stereotype ideas that had worked in the past. Another category of synchronicity is one in which there's an immediate verification of your experience. With my dream, I had to wait 8 months to actually realize the event. The dream that gives immediate verification of an experience can be startling. There's no reason for the event to happen. It's like magic, as though something happens the moment you say it, think it, or feel it. For example, if you're driving along and you say to yourself, I would like a parking space to open up, and at that moment, a car ahead pulls out of a space. This sort of thing happens to me all the time. You can't say the thought causes the event. It's just that they seem to correspond. There's a meaning that connects the two of them. Synchronicity is an acausal principle. It's entirely subjective, but it can be very powerful if you use it correctly. All these concepts we're talking about are based on the work of psychologist Carl Jung, which I have studied. It's called analytical psychology. An example of this kind of synchronistic event happened in the first Olympia that I won. While I was on stage, I thought to myself that I would like a sign or indication to be sure how the contest had turned out. At that very moment, Oscar State walked in front of me with the judge's scoring sheet, and I could see my name at the top of the list. I think when you're preparing for contest and your will and intentions are very strong, you accumulate a certain amount of power as time goes by. This power grows, and it's fed at the competition. You are fed by the audience, the validation of the audience, and by the victory. I've noticed that after each of my Olympia victories in the past 3 years, I have to be careful of how I talk. It seems that whatever I say at those times happens. A strong synchronistic event happened to me last August 26th while I was in Palm Springs training for the Olympia. I was lying in the sun, and I had a vision while I was awake. This vision gave me my strategy at the Olympia. This happened right after I returned from a successful exhibition in Canada. At the Olympia itself, I did exactly what I had experienced in the vision. I really didn't pose a lot. It seemed to me that a lot of the guys in the contest were overposing and hamming it up. I felt the best thing was not to overact, but to contrast their overacting by doing less than I normally would do. It would make the other competitors' actions appear more out of context than they actually were. At the Olympia, I was in the greatest shape of my life. I had more size and muscularity than ever before. In my vision at the Palm Springs before the contest, I came out on stage, and I was in such great shape that I just stood there and laughed. I knew then that this was the kind of behavior I would follow at the Olympia. I then forgot about it until I was on stage, and when I saw what was happening, the vision again flashed through my mind. I knew instinctively it was the best thing to do. I think part of what this is all about is bending outer situations to fit what you really want to happen. It's possible when you've put enough energy into it. I think that this is what I've done the past 3 years. I had a lot of odds stacked against me every year, but my attitude was always right, and I won each time. You don't win contests the night of the show. In your mind, you win them beforehand. You can tell by your association with the other competitors and by how your training is going. You become intuitive. I've always worked at bodybuilding as a total discipline. Not only does your body get better, but other things about you improve as well. Your intuition becomes very sharp if you open yourself to it. You know beforehand if you're going to win just by the attitude of the people. This year, I did more with my body than I was ever able to do. My training was really good, much of it due to my training with Christine. Not that the training was a lot more intense. I've always trained hard. Rather, it was training together that cemented the home life and the relationship more strongly. Training became a high time during the day. Only during the last few weeks did I train alone to hone in the details. I have rules for my waking behavior. The first one is correct thinking, to know what you can do and to realize that if you pursue it, it will happen. You must disregard negative attitudes around you. Nobody knows what can happen except you. If you let other people determine how far you're going to go in life, you'll always fall short. There are some people, of course, who know that you can do even more than you think you can. If you have a goal, you have got to go for it 100%. There's no time for doubt. The essence of correct thinking is removal of all doubt. Secondly, you must be careful of the way you talk. If you talk about the germ of an idea, the event starts to take shape and finally materializes. The older I get, the more I see that the things that happen to me are the ones I spoke about. If I say the wrong thing, it too will happen. When I talk about winning the Olympia, I have already won it. I'm sure about it. I don't talk about winning as something tentative. To me, it is an absolute. If you abide by these rules, thinking correctly and saying the right thing, correct behavior is going to follow. It's difficult to have faith in something that hasn't happened yet. Doubt remains a prime difficulty in being human, but you have nothing to lose by making a decision. Winning is the name of the game. There is no reason why you can't win. You only need the right attitude. What I'm saying in this article is the end product of 23 years of testing and observation. There are some people who can apply the concepts and benefit immediately. There are others who can't. They have to start from the beginning. However, I've always insisted in my articles that each individual must give it his personal reality test. Bodybuilding itself is a fantastic way to build self-esteem. You become a creator. You cause something to happen. That's what we're talking about here. Anybody can create something of value, whether in bodybuilding or in other areas of life. All it takes is persistence without doubt. Wow, great article by Frank Zane. And we got another good article in this magazine from Mike Mentzer, where he talks about his psychology and getting ready for the 1979 Olympia. So I think I'll read that one next week. All right. Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I hope everybody has a great week. Thanks to our sponsors again, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine, and all of our Patreon sponsors. We will see you guys next week. Have a great week, everybody. Take care.